Welcome to Clearly Quaker, an ongoing series of podcasts by Salem Quarterly Meeting, part of the Religious Society of Friends. Salem Quarterly Meeting is an association of seven Southern New Jersey Quaker meetings within Philadelphia Yearly Meeting. Lucy Duncan was the guest speaker at Salem Quarterly Meeting on December 11th in 2016. She serves as the Director of Friends Relations for American Friends Service Committee. She's been a storyteller for 20 years and has worked with Quaker meetings on telling stories for racial justice and of spiritual experience. Before working for AFSC, she was Director of Communications at Friends General Conference, managed Quaker Books of FGC, and owned and managed her own children's bookstore in Omaha.
AFSC for our centennial year has a website called Peaceworks. If you go to peaceworks.afsc.org, we're collecting the stories of people who have worked with us, whether they're donors or people who participated in work camps or partners. And we have already 200 stories collected on that website. And we have a little recap of the errors of our 100 years. And then there's a way for you to collect, to tell your own story. There's some really incredible stories that are being said, being told there. And we're doing it this way because it's not, AFSC's work is about all of the people that do the work and not about just about what we've done. But I've told my story there, and this is a longer version of the story that I've told on that website. And this one isn't really about what I did, but it's more about being inspired by others. Slowly we learn that we are all broken, all less than perfect, and that God loves us, each one, wonderfully even so. Slowly we learn that the real love for one another we crave is not the ideal love of my personal facade for your facade, but the imperfect intent to love that my flawed self offer the real you. That's Lloyd Lee Wilson. Dominique Stevenson, the program director of AFSC's Friend of a Friend program, picked me up at the Baltimore train station, and we drove the 90 minutes to Hagerstown, Maryland, where I would accompany her into two prisons. Dominique told me that there isn't much in Hagerstown, and it's hard for families of the men that are incarcerated to get there. It's a long drive, and some don't have cars. In heavy rain, we arrived at the Maryland Correctional Training Center late in the afternoon, and we walked up to the gates, chain-linked with endless concertina wire encircling the prison, and guard towers perched above us. We waited. One gate opened. Then we stood in between two gates and waited as the second gate slid open to let us through. In the reception area, I walked through the metal detector, and it buzzed. After removing my glasses and my watch, I tried again, but the alarm sounded one more time. The female guard told me I had to clear the metal detector to get in. Dominique said that it was my underwire bra that was setting off the machines. So I went into the restroom, took it off, walked through the metal detector successfully this time, put my bra back on. Dominique said this kind of treatment is common. Families of incarcerated men often have to go through a lot, more than me, to get in to see their loved ones. We walked through several more doors and passed a few guards into the central yard and walked into the manicured grass. On the way, we passed a bright, noisy dining hall, a contrast to the quiet of the lawn. I don't know what I expected, but the places we went in the prison felt like a community college to me, which felt both true to me and not true. The prison, in many ways, is just another place, full of people trying to make the best of the situation. But I also perceive that this pristine lawn masked a sense of the harsh reality of the place. I couldn't but help think of schools and how much better equipped this facility was than the inner city school where I used to teach, how much better staffed, and what a difference this money would make if it were spent when these men were children. A guard escorted us the last few hundred feet into the locked and empty classroom building, and then he called for the men to join us there. Almost all of the men incarcerated at this particular prison are African American or men of color. Most of the guards are white. The guard took us into a plain room with hard desk chairs. Dominique said most of the chairs were made with prison labor. People on the outside can buy the chairs and other items too for a low cost, but she noted the income perpetuates the system. Dominique has been working with the men at MCTC since 2006. The men themselves were instrumental in designing the program, establishing the focus on mentorship. They really wanted to support the younger men that came into the prison and be fathers and mentors to those men. It's clear that Dominique has had a long relationship with them and that they were excited to see her and one another. As for me, the men were really very gracious and welcoming. When they greeted me, each of them looked me in the eye in a way that made me feel really seen and recognized. I noticed their energy and felt as though I were in the midst of great spiritual strength, the kind born of facing great hardship and oneself and finding peace and freedom in the midst of that. The session began with Dominique talking about a few of the men who had been in the program and had been released. One of them had to take a train somewhere and wrote extensive notes to himself about how to do it. Because he had been on the inside so long, he hadn't ever ridden a train. She described the fear some of the men have when they are released, facing new experiences every day, trying to negotiate a world that isn't very friendly to them. Dominique reported on the Freedom School that she helped to establish in Baltimore and how some of the men's family members were participating in that. It was time for the men to begin their dialogue. Dominique said, the basis for this program, for all we do, is love. But we haven't talked about it for a while, and it's time again. She invited a man to read a poem she brought. Then she asked, what do we mean by love? As I listened to the men, I felt as though they were reciting Corinthians 13, but the words were their own and had been written on their hearts. A tall, older man started. Love can be defined as a noun or a verb. When you're in love, that feeling can fade, then what? Mature love is about what you do, how you act, the sacrifices you're willing to make. A younger man continued, love is a willingness to endure, tolerate those who are unpleasant, unkind, unforgiving. Love is patience, a willingness to withstand onslaught and stand on what you believe. A big man who's been in the program a long time said, family has grown. We're brothers here. We've stuck with this and we didn't let this fail. It's black men seeing each other as each other. The man across the room answered, love is a service. You do something for someone else. Dominique responded, I love the community like myself, but in order to have the big love, I have to show love to myself. A man with laughing eyes said, it's a lot about experience. My daughter is bitter, but she doesn't have to do anything. I love her to death. I love her because I understand why she might be bitter. She doesn't have to do anything, though. I just love her. She's my daughter. Across the room, an older man said, love makes us vulnerable to feel another's hurts. A man responded, sometimes love is letting go of someone, letting them make their own mistakes. I let you go so you can learn yourself. Another said, look, we can only grow in our time. There's no time to waste. But that's why patience is so critical. Across the room, one of the younger participants said, how do we define family? If your brother has been oppressed, help him. If your brother's been an oppressor, help him by helping him to stop the oppression. That one feels so much like what love is about. Another responded, sometimes love and hate feel so close. The first man replied, one issue is we lack understanding. And love is the highest degree of understanding. You can hate someone's actions, but love the person. If you hate someone, you're hating the creator. We need to hate the action. We hate others because we lack understanding. An older man said, we have a government that doesn't advocate love. I don't expect the government to offer love. Humans make it up. but don't behave in human ways. We have come from communities that were denied love. Then came this definition of love from a younger man. Every heart is wounded. Love is a willingness to be vulnerable. You've got to be willing to admit you're afraid. What we're doing right now is vulnerable. In this group, we're taking the risk of love. With what I shared, I could be played on. But this makes you stronger, responded one of the older men. From across the room, a voice said, doing this, it gives birth. Yesterday, I was sitting with the police. He said, I've been watching you. You deserve more than what you're getting. Love, this kind of sharing, it gives birth. Too soon, the guard came and told us it was time to finish up. The men said a very warm goodbye to me and invited me to visit again. We walked down the hall. I felt so safe in the midst of these men and asked them if they would be walking with us across the yard. They said, no, we'll be following after. Dominique said they used to walk with her, that she felt safer, more comfortable when they did, but the prison administration said they couldn't anymore. Now she has to walk alone back across the lawn and out of the prison. We walked through the chain link fences, under the concertina wire, past the reception area, back to Dominique's car for the drive back to Baltimore. It felt so incongruous to me to have such amazing spiritual energy locked up, hidden and almost inaccessible to those of us in the community. It's clear these men are sharing their wisdom in the prison, changing their world, mentoring younger men, and ministering. But what could they do if they were among us, teaching us, living and growing? I don't know what each of them did to get locked up. Many are there on drug charges. But those that I met, they seem to have owned it, whatever it was. Some really clearly, painfully live with what they did. I wonder what does it do to us to miss their smiles, their wisdom, their amazing, powerful, loving energy? What does it do to us, to our hearts, to exile them apart, away from their children, their partners, their communities? Do we not arise from one spirit expressed in distinct earthen vessels? What about forgiveness? I asked Dominique, if the pathology of the United States is her denial, what does that denial look like? I proposed that it looked like a prison. Dominique said that it looks like the boarded up houses in West Baltimore from which many of these men come. In my storytelling life, the folk story I've been telling the longest, Tam Lin, is about love. I told the story for the first time at my brother's wedding. In it, a man who has been imprisoned and enchanted by the fairy folk is released from that imprisonment by a young woman, Janet, who holds him while the monsters within are released. He turns into a bird of prey and he tries to fly away, a bear that tries to bite her, a snake that tries to suffocate her, a cold block of ice, and a burning branch. Through it all, she holds him fast and fears him not, until he turns into a branch that burns, at which point she throws the branch into the stream nearby. The spell is broken, and Tam Lin becomes human again. It seems to me that Martin Luther King Jr. and those many who were part of the civil rights movement understood this story. Martin Luther King Jr. didn't just hold one person with that kind of fierce love, but he held the whole society while our monsters were revealed. He held us while the human reemerged. What role do we as Quakers have to play in holding our communities with such big love, with the kind of love that brings about such transformation? Can we offer one another such fierce love as Dominique and the men in this program offer one another? Can we hold one another as the walls and prisons around our hearts break open? Can we call out the human in one another, our communities, and our institutions? My prayer is that we try. So one of the incredible blessings of my work is that I've gotten to travel around and witness some of the amazing work that AFSC does like that. And see the imaginal selves of the organization working in the communities. And it's pretty incredible, it's pretty transformative to get to see that, from seeing people who were involved in the conflict in Burundi in healing and rebuilding our communities, be able to heal from the trauma they experienced with that war and forgive people who may have killed somebody in their family, and to be really re-energized, awakened, and alive in the process of that forgiveness. To seeing our farmer-to-farmer program, farmer-to-farmer training program in New Mexico, where they are working to rebuild the food system by equipping farmers of color to be organic farmers, and then bringing them together in a co-op so they can sell to the public schools in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. So it's been an incredible blessing to get to see that work and to get to see all of these seeds of change that are planted all over the world.
Thank you for listening to Clearly Quaker. We hope you have found this podcast thought-provoking. If you have questions or comments, or would like to learn more about South Jersey Quakers, reach us at salemquarter.net.